So the NBA playoffs roll on. We've got our conference finals set. The Boston Celtics are going to take on the Miami Heat. And then you got the Golden State Warriors going up against the Dallas Mavericks.
Is it really Dallas?
Or is it Luka?
He's that dude.
He really is that dude.
He's that dude.
If you didn't watch the game because the game was terrible, you certainly saw the memes that came out of that game. You know it's a bad night for you when the guy who's dropping 30-some-odd points is laughing the entire time. When he's just looking at you, smiling and laughing. That is embarrassing. And it was really bad for Chris Paul of the Phoenix Suns. And he discussed how the Mavericks were just the better team in Game 7.
They just executed better than we did. You know, Book was talking. They was putting two on him, picking us up full court all game long. And, you know, tonight, defensively, we just never caught up with the ball. You know, they were making tough shots. They were getting threes, layups, a little bit of everything. And we just, we never made the game competitive.
So that was Chris Paul. And then he was asked if this loss in a Game 7 hits hard enough, but it hit harder because your chance at winning a title is wrapped and you're 37 and you started looking every bit of 37 in Game 7.
Did it hit you a little harder when the buzzer is a lost opportunity?
Not at all. They said that last year. Probably said it back in 08. You know, you play long enough and you don't win. Every time you lose, they're going to say it was your best chance. But I think for me, us, is we'll be right back next year. Tell you that much. I'm not retiring tomorrow. Thank God. You know, hopefully I'm healthy, come back, but keep playing.
We've seen in these playoffs that you could lose a game in the series and check out because you know there's another game to be played. Joe, I can't remember on either side a game that has been decided so quickly in a Game 7. It just doesn't happen that way. And it makes me seriously wonder how that happens. Because he talks about execution. This isn't strategy anymore. This isn't execution. It's being ready to play the game of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
They had 27 points in the first half of the game. They scored 10 points in the second quarter of the game. They were down 30 at the half of Game 7.
Yeah.
This isn't Tuesday night against the Jazz. This isn't, oh, we're playing back-to-back. Maybe I'll rest my knees. Your best chance. Yeah, buddy, I got news for you. You were the best team in the NBA this year. This was your best chance. Shout out to Anthony, who does the production for the Durham Bulls games. He pointed out to me that Chris Paul, you know, actually lost in the state title game in high school as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to be a jerk, but some people don't know how to win. Some people are cursed, as I've said to you before. Would you rather be interested in golf and be terrible at putting like I am? Or would you rather just not care about golf at all? That's why I'm jealous of you for that act.
Because I don't care about
golf. Because you
don't
care at all. Like, I am cursed enough to be just good enough at golf to be mad at it.
Yeah.
That is Chris Paul's curse. Mm-hmm. He's unbelievable during the regular season. He cannot summon whatever he needs in the postseason. Now, last year they're in the finals. Credit to him. He dragged them to the finals last year.
Yeah.
Devin Booker, who I love. I am like number one Devin Booker stan. Sometimes the other guy just gets you.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't be down 50 in a Game 7.
Well, I guess
that's where the coach, you got to go out on the floor, throw your crap all over the place, mm-hmm. and say, you got to pull a Roy and pull the five guys, pull Blue Steel out and say, hey, buddy, what are we doing here? Like, there are things you can do as a coach in situations like that, but that's a wholesale failure from every single person in the Phoenix Suns organization. Wholesale. I will not pin that on Chris Paul, but what I will say to Chris Paul is, yes, your window is closed.
It is.
You think you'll be back next year? You won't. Let me spoil the ending for you. You won't.
You can eat all the trail mix you want to maintain your body, but he looked very much his age as the series progressed.
Now, I will say,
only going to get worse from here.
I will say, after he was injured with the Rockets, I thought he physically was done.
Mm-hmm.
So he has done tremendous in his second act here with first Oklahoma City, mm-hmm. and now these 2 years with Phoenix have been spectacular. But at some point, you have to look around and go, wait a second. My college team was spectacular during the regular season. We couldn't get it done in the postseason. Wait a second. All of my pro teams have been more than competitive in the regular, including this year with the best record in the NBA by 8 games.
Yes.
8 games.
Yes.
And we can't get it done in the postseason, particularly in a game 7 situation at home. Like,
couple thoughts.
Chris.
Couple thoughts. Chris Paul is the majority. That's the thing.
I agree.
I think we tend to forget this. I think we take winning a championship for granted. Because you're sitting here talking about all the ways in which Chris Paul got stung. I mean, there's a guy who talks for a living on TNT who never won a championship, and that's Charles Barkley. And he also got
to the Suns to the final.
He's a great freaking player.
Yep.
He's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the NBA 50, but he never won a title. Guys like Chris Paul are the majority, which gets me to Giannis, right? Great player. Great Bucks team. Chris Middleton. I mean, there's all sorts of factors as to why the Boston Celtics are in the conference finals against the Miami Heat and not the Bucks. A lot of it has to do with the fact that Jason Tatum continues to grow and be spectacular. But Giannis not getting back to even the finals gets us to a lack of appreciation for LeBron James. How many NBA finals?
It was 9 in a row, right?
9 in a row. 9.
9 times.
And people act as though, well, he didn't win them all. Dude, he got there. That's the point. Because you see how difficult it is, as great as you might be in your windows, to even get back after you won one.
And one of those was with Matthew Dellavedova as his second best player.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, 2 things can be true with what I've seen out of the NBA playoffs so far. The NBA is enjoying an incredible postseason where the new stars or guys who have been toiling in the league have finally had opportunities to show off, right? You've seen the build for Jason Tatum. It's coming to fruition. Giannis is Giannis. Luka Doncic is that dude. We've got prime examples. The Golden State Warriors clearly aren't done. They still have their stars. You've got Steph Curry, etc. They're experiencing this really great postseason, and the ratings have reflected that. But it also shows you that what LeBron James was able to do for 9 straight finals appearances, okay, and then obviously the bubble and beating the Heat and getting another championship with the Lakers, how incredibly difficult it is to do what he did and that we still don't appreciate what he did. The further we get away from LeBron James' career and we look at all these new guys and we're trying to position them as the next ones to take it over, how difficult it is to consistently do it. So, props to the NBA. Young stars, new guys. You know, we saw Ja Morant, right? All these guys coming up. But also at the same time, appreciating LeBron James for what he was able to do. His career is not over, obviously, but he's getting up there in age, and it's not as easy for him to get back in these situations.
Did you notice who had the second most points yesterday for the Dallas Mavericks, by the way? I'll save it for you. It was Spencer Dinwiddie.
Yes.
Remember all those moves that the Nets didn't have to make?
Mm-hmm.
I think...
Was that one of them?
I think KD and Kyrie with a Dinwiddie as a supporting scorer might have been okay. They didn't have to make the James Harden move. So, again, for all the people who want to blame Kyrie, I go back and blame Marks.
Alongside Joe Giglio, I'm Joe Ovius. Carolina Hurricanes moving on. They'll see the New York Rangers Wednesday night, PNC Arena, game 2 on Friday night, 8 o'clock. The weather holds up. That's got prime drinking written all over it. Plus, it was a jam-packed Game 7 weekend. Carolina Hurricanes and the Boston Bruins weren't the only team playing a Game 7. It was all over the place, both in the NHL and the NBA. Let's log on to the internet, shall we? What's Trending is brought to you by Geico. You got a choice of ways that you can save on car insurance. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Go online to geico.com or stop by the Geico office nearest you. Let's get it.
Number 5.
The PGA Championship starts on Thursday in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Joe. Scottie Scheffler, your Masters champion, is the favorite at nearly 11-1, followed by Jon Rahm, who's 12-1. Tiger Woods, you can get for 69-1. Nice.
Nice.
However, let's get to the part that you're really interested in, Joe. Cocktail menus, beer menus. Is there a beer shortage that we don't know about in the Tulsa area? Because a Michelob Ultra on sale at Southern Hills, $18.
Stella, don't tell me that when I'm drinking water.
Stella
Artois. I almost did a spit take. Stella what?
Wait till we get to the kicker. Stella Artois, $19. Okay, for one beer. They do look like they're a bigger size, but we'll get into that. The Kona Big Wave Golden Ale? Kona?
Yeah. It's not bad.
$15.
It must be a smaller pour.
Here, a Michelob Ultra Organic Seltzer, not just a seltzer. $19.
Again, that's got to be a big pour.
Here's the kicker. Cocktails, $15. So they want you liquored up out on the golf course?
Hold up.
Liquor is cheaper than beer at the PGA Championship this week.
So this has to be a quantity issue then. Like, is it 24 ounces of? Am I getting a double deuce?
These do look like bigger beers.
Okay. Then that would make sense. For $18,
so basically two beers is what you're getting.
Okay. Yeah, if I'm getting 24 ounces of beer, that makes
sense.
But
isn't that worse, though? Because it'd be hot.
Yeah.
And you're drinking out of that deuce.
Yeah, that could be a problem. At $15, my guess is the pour of liquor is 2 ounces. You're getting a shot of liquor.
Yeah.
In whatever drink you're getting.
Yeah.
And then when you get to, who's drinking 2 ounces of liquor when you're getting ready to walk out? So you're going to make that a double, right?
All right.
So now you're up in the $30 range for a mixed drink.
I'd still go...
Would you still go? Would you still drop $30 on a double of whatever? Interesting.
Well, okay.
You're talking about
Here's
the beer warming up. You're talking about the beer warming
up. Yeah, and the difference between you and me. If I had two shots, I would be smooth for that golf round. Or I'd be okay.
We're talking neat.
Yeah. If I just had two shots, I'd be like, okay.
Well, see, I would make that a double of, say, vodka soda. And that'd be good to go.
This says souvenir cocktails are $19. They have Jim Beam, Black Ginger Highball, Transfusion, Margarita, and Mule.
Oh, okay. So they're mixed drinks at $19?
Yeah. But that's where you get the signature souvenir, where you probably get the cup that says PGA Championship.
Yeah. Okay. I might go with that, actually.
Those are the sponsors. Jim Beam and Ultra is a sponsor. Oh, Michelob Ultra is a sponsor of the PGA Tour.
I'm actually go with the liquor drink, then.
That's
with
what
the souvenir
saying.
Cup at $19? I might go with that.
You can always start with the... Now, I say this, but I went to a concert...
Beer before liquor. Never sicker.
Yeah, I was going to say no. I say you start... Red Hat, middle of downtown.
Mm-hmm.
$20 for cocktail. You get one of those, then you go for the... Mm-hmm.
Liquor before beer, never fear.
Yes.
That's
the move.
In the clear.
Oh, I always thought it was
number four.
No fear.
No, it's
or well, you probably have some
regardless.
Fear,
regardless. In the clear, no fear.
Depends on the shot.
This is true. If I had Goldschlager to start,
no.
Then I have fear.
Oh no, Rumpelmintz is on the no list.
Oh.
It's on the no fly list.
Fun fact, I've heard Goldschlager opens up your voice a little bit. So
you've heard.
I've heard.
Mm, so you've heard.
Fun fact.
All right.
Also, if you eat or drink Rumpelmintz, you want to brush your teeth for like 4 days.
So
number four.
Out of the weekend, it looks like Drew Brees is one and done in the studio with NBC Sports. If you've been keeping up with media matters, this has been an offseason of change for you might not pay attention to this stuff, but you will notice once the football season starts up, where are the people that I'm used to seeing on my channels? Like Joe Bucks with ESPN. You might have forgotten about that. You'll see Kirk Herbstreit with Al Michaels on Amazon? Yeah, it's been a weird offseason in media transactions and who you will be seeing on football broadcasts. Drew Brees had done a season of studio work with NBC Sports, Sunday Night Football in America. That looks like it's done. But is his television career done? Drew Brees tweeted out, quote, "Despite speculation from media about my future this fall, I'm currently undecided. I may work for NBC. I may play football again." What? He goes on. "I may focus on business and philanthropy. Why? What's wrong with me? I can't talk all of a sudden? Philanthropy. What's wrong with me? Did I have a liquor drink?
It's Monday. I don't know.
Did I just have a double at a golf tournament? Jeez. Anyway, he says he might train for the pickleball tour, senior golf tour, coach my kids.
See what he did there,
or all of the above. I'll let you know.
Funny.
He was being funny.
Oh.
He's being funny.
What a card.
So a lot of people were taking this as speculation that Drew Brees actually might pull a Tom Brady and come out of retirement, although his retirement lasted 40 days, not an entire season, and go play somewhere. Which, combine that with the speculation that the Carolina Panthers were eyeing Sean Payton, who's still under contract with the New Orleans Saints. Would you take Sean Payton and an old Drew Brees over what you currently have with Matt Rhule and Sam Darnold right now?
Well, you had to throw Matt Rhule in there. Yeah, I would.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I don't care how old Drew Brees is. I don't care how busted that guy is. I'll still take Sean Payton and Drew Brees over Matt Rhule and Sam Darnold.
Who would be the gadget quarterback? Because someone would have to throw it more than 10 yards down the field. Is that where Cam? Is that where you're?
That's when you bring Cam.
That's the long play.
That's when I will actually be okay with Cam Newton coming back, because Sean Payton might actually know what to do with Cam Newton, just like he knew what to do with Taysom Hill. Next up.
Number three.
There were so many game sevens in the NHL and NBA playoffs yesterday, Joe. Can we just talk about the good ones, though? Because, man, the NBA. I love the NBA. I love the NBA playoffs, but they did not have a good day yesterday. So let's stick with the NHL first. Rangers topped the Penguins in overtime with a 4-3 win to cap that series after the Rangers had fallen behind 3-1. The Flames then at night won a Game 7 in overtime 3-2 over Dallas. So we will get the battle for Alberta, which is Calgary versus Edmonton in the Western Conference semifinals. And then over here, of course, we have the Rangers and the Canes. And the battle for Florida, which was the Lightning, after they won a Game 7 in Toronto. And the Florida Panthers, who also won a Game 7. So, we have Panthers and the Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Canes and the Rangers. We have the Flames and the Oilers. And we have the Avs and the Blues.
Shout out to the Southeast Division.
Big time.
Out here repping. Right now, that Tampa Bay Florida series should be a lot of fun, as will the Canes and the Rangers. That'll be a lot of fun as well.
I mean, can they actually be better than the first round? The first round across the board, other than the Avs sweeping the Predators in the West. I mean, the rest of the series were unbelievable.
Yes,
but I'm with you. Like on paper, right now, the Tampa Florida, which was great last year.
Mm-hmm.
It was just happened to be a first round matchup last year. Unbelievable pairing. And then, again, I think the Canes-Rangers will be wide open. But there are a lot of people who follow hockey who were rooting for the Flames last night. I believe even the Oilers fans, because they wanted to see Calgary and Edmonton together. You got to remember, too, like, a team from Canada hasn't won the Cup since 93. And every year there is some sort of national pride where they want. And we all forget the Canadians were actually in the Stanley Cup final last year. It was a weird... It's weird how it actually happened because of the divisions, but Montreal was in the finals last year. It's just people just kind of forget how badly they got beaten, that it wasn't, that it actually was the finals.
A couple takeaways so far from the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs outside of the Carolina Hurricanes. The first one is what we're seeing on the east side of things, not the west. What we kind of knew throughout the regular season, it's a lot deeper than we might want to give credit, and it's a hell of a job that the Carolina Hurricanes – a hell of a job that they did to even win the division. Because as we're seeing, it's some big boy hockey being played on this side of the bracket. It also kind of solidifies, crystallizes what Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the NHL, talked about during his visit here in Raleigh for game one of the Boston Canes series. When I forgot who it was who asked him.
Scott Burnside.
It's Scott Burnside. Scott Burnside asked him about the playoff format, any sort of, you know, thought to changing the playoff format, because, you know, some people find it a little bit convoluted, et cetera. He goes, no, it's producing great matchups. It's producing, and as we saw in this particular case, a bunch of great series to start. So credit to Gary Bettman for sticking to his guns. But you also talk about the length of time some things have happened. You talk about Canadian teams, right, in the Stanley Cup. Florida Panthers hadn't won a playoff series
since making the Stanley Cup.
Since 1996.
Yes.
You got to go all the way back to when they were chucking plastic rats on the ice Okay? That's how long ago that was. Toronto, they get bounced. Toronto hasn't won a playoff series, I think, since 2004? Come on now.
It's nuts.
So there are some there are some wild stats that have been produced in this early round of the NHL playoffs.
I'm starting to think Toronto. I try to find the NC State equivalent across all sports.
It's like Freddie Anderson's probably thinking the key to making it out of the first round of the playoffs as a goalie is to not have played in the first round of the playoffs. He'll be fine.
But I didn't realize Toronto's actually won the cup 13 times.
Yeah.
So when they won their 13th cup in 67, mm-hmm. Montreal had 14 Stanley Cups. And Toronto had 13. I think Montreal has 24 now.
Of course, there was only so many NHL teams in
no,
that
I
time.
Know, but
it's kind of like it's kind of like Kane stats, right?
Yeah, but you got to think that the Rangers went from 1940 until 94 without
true.
Winning it.
True.
So even if there's only six teams at the time, you still have to win the damn thing.
What's your favorite New Jersey term that you love to use from time to time? A little fugazi, right?
Oh, yeah, it's a fugazi.
So here we are with some Kane stats. Like, oh, Sebastian Aho keeps rocketing up the Canes postseason points list. I'm like, well, yeah.
He's playing in a lot of playoff games.
He's played in four straight years of playoffs. Oh, he surpassed, you know, whoever it is, Jeff O'Neill or Brad Brindamore. And it's like, right. How many times over the span of their career did they even make the playoffs when those guys were here? So it is kind of interesting how the Canes are in this new form. You know, you got the Panthers and the Lightning who have obviously come up and been consistently good. It's been a lot of fun. Next up.
Number two.
To the NBA playoffs, which did not produce great game sevens yesterday. Mm-hmm. Although the Milwaukee Bucks.
Two great performances, though.
Yeah, the Milwaukee Bucks and Boston Celtics was fun to a point, and it did give you an amazing performance out of Jason Tatum again. And then the Phoenix Suns Dallas Mavericks series was never a contest, and Luka Doncic was the excitement. He was the reason why you watched. That guy was playing a screw you ball on the Phoenix Suns. Now, there will be plenty of time to talk about the Heat and the Celtics and how it's going to be a pretty entertaining matchup. There will be plenty of time to talk about the Dallas Mavericks and the Golden State Warriors. This is actually a good thing for the NBA. You're seeing rising stars get their moments throughout this playoffs, even on teams that ended up losing. You got moments out of Ja Morant, right? You're seeing Luka Doncic do his thing yesterday against the Suns. Jason Tatum, I cannot say enough great things about Jason Tatum. And we sit here and we talk about times in which people like to point out you were wrong about stuff. When it comes to Jason Tatum, I like to go back and say during that draft, hey, dummies, the most NBA-ready guy right now is this dude, Jason Tatum. And he has continued to pay off every season for the Boston Celtics. That being said, the conversation today is about another ACC guy, Chris Paul. Turns out he had a quad injury. He looked every bit his age. But people really love to slander Chris Paul. And I'm trying to figure out why. Is it because he hits people in the groin? Is it because they have a latent hatred for Cliff Paul? What is it about Chris Paul that has people celebrating the fact that he is out again? And Chris Paul has put together amazing regular seasons, but people absolutely love to point out to you that Chris Paul has never won a championship in his life.
At any level.
At any level. People love to tell you this. And I'm like, why? What did Chris Paul do to you? Are you all Julius Hodge fans that I'm not aware of? What am I missing with the Chris Paul slander? For instance, Patrick Beverley woke up, the Timberwolves. Pat Beverley woke up crack of dawn to start his ESPN car wash on a variety of shows to roast Chris Paul. Just destroy the man. Here he is, Patrick Beverley, on NBA players not being afraid of the Suns.
If I'm playing a game and I'm getting ready for the Phoenix Suns, come on, let's go. If I'm getting a game and I'm getting ready for the Golden State Warriors, yeah, I'll holler at y'all tomorrow. I got an early one. I'm just saying, my preparation is very different.
Okay. Yeah, then Pat Beverley, again, this is on ESPN all day today, he called Chris Paul a traffic cone.
True. He's not lying about
that. CP can't guard nobody, man. Everybody in the NBA know that.
Everybody know that. He can't guard anybody.
What we call him? Cone. You know what you do with cones? Like when in the summertime, you got a cone. You make a move. What does the cone do?
Stay still.
Exactly. Yeah. He's a cone. Stop playing, man. Everybody knows that. Everyone knows that. It's just y'all don't want to accept it.
So the other voice you heard in there was J.J. Redick.
Yeah, J.J. Redick was in
there. Who played on the Clippers teams with Chris Paul. So
here's all right. So here's where
But it's interesting to hear just unvarnished from, now let's be honest, Patrick Beverley is not someone who's popular around the NBA.
No.
Has his own way about him, but I don't suspect, I don't have any reason to believe that he's exaggerating anything. When you talk about what Chris Paul and his reputation is amongst his peers. Now, keep in mind, Chris Paul's also the head of the NBAPA, so there could be some ill will there as well. But it's just kind of interesting to hear. It's one thing to hear people like me and you and whoever else have their own opinions about basketball. But it really is another when you do hear the players that who have competed against him for a long time.
About Chris Paul and the lack of championships. This might not be a popular opinion because I know the cool thing to do right now is to dunk on Chris Paul. And it is kind of weird that here's a guy who has put together incredible regular seasons, has had good teams around him, and they still come up short when it matters the most. I mean, those Wake Forest teams that he was on were great. And then they ended up getting West Virginia. In Cleveland, got pitsnoggled in West Virginia, right? Of course, you have like the Julius Hodge thing and everything else. And he's had countless teams that he's been a part of in the NBA that have come up short in the postseason. And again, this might be an unpopular opinion, but Chris Paul is actually the norm in the NBA. Chris Paul is actually the norm in most sports. Not everybody gets to win championships. Not all great players end up winning the whole thing. I can give you prime examples across all of sports. Dan Marino is the most obvious one in the NFL. Here's a guy who absolutely is a Hall of Famer. Put up monster numbers. Got to a Super Bowl. Won. Lost. Charles Barkley, who goes on TNT and is the arbiter of what is and what is not elite, right? This guy's a superstar. This guy has it. This guy doesn't. How many rings does Charles Barkley have? Now, he owns this particular thing, but Barkley's a prime example of somebody who is an absolute Hall of Famer, one of the NBA's greatest players. No championships. None. Some people just can't win them. Not everybody does. Which gets to my other point. Look across this playoff series. Look across other playoff series. Kawhi Leonard wins a championship in Toronto. People are thinking this is Kawhi's time. How'd that play out?
It's been a minute.
Been a minute, right? Giannis changes the game. Bucks, they're here for good. Man, how many championships can they win? They just got beat by the Boston Celtics. He's not even going to defend the title. They're not even in the championship, right? All of this is a long-winded way of saying, can we have yet more appreciation for LeBron James? LeBron James went to 9 straight finals. The knock was always, well, he lost in these finals. That's not the point. The point is he got there. Look across all these other examples of teams and their inability to even get there again. LeBron James took teams 9 straight times. Lakers eventually they got there.
Not always with the greatest supporting cast in the history of the world.
No, 2 versions of the Cleveland Cavaliers that were terrible.
Yeah,
they literally dragged. One had Booby Gibson, and the other one had our guy Matthew Dellavedova. Right, 2 iterations of terrible Cleveland teams literally dragged them to the finals. So I know it's not popular to give LeBron James's props because things have been a disaster in L.A., but let's also remember that old mercenary LeBron with Anthony Davis did win one in the bubble, which I thought was more difficult to do than any of the other championships, because that's pure basketball, baby. Pure basketball, along with the circumstances of being stuck in the wide world of sports. I don't care how many fish they stocked the Seven Seas Lagoon with outside the Magic Kingdom. I don't care how much coffee Jimmy Butler sold with Big Face Coffee. Dude, that was tough. So a little more appreciation for LeBron James, because everybody's going to hype up Luka. How many times can he be able to do this? Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to hype up Jason Tatum. I'm included in this. He might not win. They might get bounced by the Heat. It's entirely possible they get bounced by the Heat. Jimmy Butler is another example of a guy who absolutely knows what he's doing. He is that dude. How many finals appearances does Jimmy Butler have?
The one in the bubble.
The one in the bubble.
Yeah.
So, and he might get another one. So a little appreciation for LeBron James, man. It's hard. It's hard. Let's get to the top story of the day.
The number one story of the day.
We're number one. We're number one.
Carolina Hurricanes, New York Rangers, Wednesday. 7 o'clock, we'll be outside PNC Arena doing the show. We'll also be outside PNC Arena for Game 2 on Friday. That's an 8 o'clock game. That's got prime drinking opportunity. Looking forward to what the parking lot's going to be like on Friday when we're done with the show. But the Carolina Hurricanes got here in a way that I will admit I did not think they would get here. I didn't think it was going to take 7 games. And I did not think that Saturday was going to be easy. And it certainly wasn't. They needed excellent performances from Jacob Slavin, who's great all the time, but he was extra great on Saturday. Antti Raanta continues to do the damn thing in net, waiting for Freddie Anderson to come back. And Rod Brind'Amour understood that the expectations going into this Game 7 have been different from other Game 7s, like the one against Washington on the road, because the Hurricanes were not at a level where the expectations were about going the distance.
It's such a different feeling coming into this one. You know, I think back in the other ones, it was like, you know, if we would have won, you guys might have been a little surprised. You know, like this time around, I felt like it was our time, you know, and you know, our guys have matured and I think they felt that too. So, you know, obviously happy for everybody.
That's Rod Brind'Amour, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. He was asked today about the familiarity with the Rangers going into round two.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what, you know, you ask about, you know, do you, the preparation time and all that. Well, we've had time because we played against them recently. So you're going to, you know, go back to that film especially and, you know, build off of that. And obviously there are recent games, but end of the day, yeah, it's always the same story. It's, you know, can we get to our game, you know, and then, you know, they're going to say the same thing. And which team does it the best is the team that, you know, should win.
That was right, Brind'Amour today as they get ready for the round two against the New York Rangers. The OG, alongside Joe Giglio, I'm Joe Ovias. This series is not going to be like the Boston series. It's not going to be as testy.
It should be freer. There should be a little bit more ice.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you look at Shesterkin in the regular season than he had. No, I'm not trying to dismiss what he did in the first round.
Sure.
But those were back and forth games with Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm.
high scoring games with Pittsburgh. This isn't the equivalent of seeing Andrei Vasilevsky, the outstanding Tampa goalie who's really willed them the last couple of years. Shesterkin was the best goalie in the NHL this year, though. So if he finds that form, Joe, you know, that's a dangerous spot for the Carolina Hurricanes. But I think once again that home ice will help them. Jordan Staal will be in the right spots. I think that's going to help them again. But if you're Rod Brind'Amour, I think what you really want to see this series is you want to see a step forward from Sebastian Aho. You want to see a step forward from Andrei Svechnikov. And that top line really shows some defensive responsibility against New York's top line. So it doesn't have to be Staal out there. The only way you can have success is if Staal is out there. I think a big part of that, too, is New York's a deeper team than what Boston was.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually my takeaway for the Carolina Hurricanes. It's not a new takeaway. These are things that we've known about the Carolina Hurricanes. They're a deep team.
Yeah.
They've been a deep team all year. I feel like...
I mean, heck, Max Domi just scored 2 goals in Game 7.
I think here's the thing. Here's the thing about the Carolina Hurricanes and the Boston Bruins. And I'm guilty of this. I will fully admit that I can get caught up in this. And I think you and I are in the same position. When you saw Boston's big guys show up, Brad Marchand, Pastrnak, Pierre, you know, Patrice Bergeron, like, especially at home too, it's like, man, the Carolina Hurricanes name players also have to do the same thing. Where's Sebastian Aho? Where's Andrei Svechnikov? Right? Like, these are the things that you want to match. Hey, their big guys are producing, your big guys need to produce. That's not to say that Svechnikov didn't have his moments in the series. At home he did. It's not to say that Sebastian Aho didn't have his moments.
Game two,
he certainly had a great game. I think we tend to forget as we get caught up in the star power of, oh, wait a minute. That's not necessarily what the Hurricanes are about. Hurricanes are a deep team. They're going to play their way, and they're eventually going to wear you out. That leads to a night where Domi is your difference maker.
Well, it's also maybe, and we've talked about how the Hurricanes have the best defense in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not showy. And there's not big numbers from Jacob Slavin. He does more scoring in the playoffs than he does in the regular season.
Yeah, him and Tony D'Angelo are the ones that are actually doing the most right now.
The truth of the matter is Jacob Slavin's the best player on the Hurricanes.
Yes.
And
that's not going to...
It's not always going to knock your socks off if you don't know what you're looking for.
Yes.
But if you do, you're going, wow, that is a true difference maker. And I think when he was on the ice with those big heavies, you saw the difference. But again, if you're a deep team and you have that depth, you can't get yourself caught in a situation, which I thought was pivotal in game four, the game they lost up in Boston. You look up and Bergeron's scoring a goal and it's past Brendan Smith and Ethan Barron. You're going, well, of course that's probably going to happen. You know, not to denigrate those guys.
It's not a knock on them. It's just that's not your top guys.
Yeah. I think that the change in this series is going to be New York has more dangerous players. They look more like and play more like the Canes. Mm-hmm. The question is, again, to me, on the New York side, will be Shesterkin. Are we going to get the regular season Shesterkin, or is it going to be the guy who Pittsburgh was able to pepper in round one?
And the other thing, too, and again, this is in, if we're going to be fair about this, we're going to be fair about this. There is a group of people that will not give Tony D'Angelo any credit for anything. And I understand why. But if we're going to talk about this strictly from a hockey perspective, not anything else, I'm talking strictly what I see on the ice. Y'all know how I feel about the other stuff. I'm talking about strictly on the ice. Game four, where Tony D'Angelo wasn't the only issue that day. He was just emblematic of all of the composure that was lost that day.
There were some penalties, and then, of course, you know, throwing the stick at them.
All sorts of stuff, right?
Shot.
On Saturday, he was the one pulling Vincent Trocheck back.
Yeah.
On Saturday, he was the one that was producing. Oh. If this was a point at which D'Angelo, going into the New York series, understands, wait a minute. All right, because, again, this is his old team.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be different.
It's going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
There's a familiarity for him and that team, but also with him. They know how Tony works because they literally kicked him out. So I'll be curious to see how that angle plays itself out in this series. What I saw from D'Angelo on Saturday gives me optimism that his head's going to be screwed on straight throughout the series.
Well, give him credit. Games 5, 6, and 7.
Mm-hmm.
He went from a guy who, and he's done this the whole year. Let's not make it just about those three games.
No. Yeah.
He's done this the whole year where he's now put himself in a situation where he's going to make $5, $6, $7 million a year next year. That's one thing that the Canes, that's a bridge the Canes are going to have to cross at the end of the season, of course. And he might decide he thrives here and he's comfortable here. But we all know what that means to Tom Dundon. He's going to want a hometown discount. I don't know if Tony's going to be in it. So that's a bridge they'll cross when they get there.
Yeah, they'll worry
about
that.
But he played so well during the regular season and those three games. You just went from a guy you paid $1 million a year this year to, he's going to be in the 5, 6, 7 range.